Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, my goodness. I don't think that even I didn't get through my whole introduction. So, all right, guys, this is the B2B podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Marcy, and I will not go over my whole introduction again because I did not have my microphone turned on in all transparency. So welcome to the B2B podcast. I humbly come before each of you tonight with the intention that something that's said tonight will compel you to begin or continue making sustainable changes in your own life and relationships as you proceed along your personal journey from voiceless to victorious. And as always, I ask that God walk with us to use us to have the conversation that you need to hear. And I thank him for the voice, the platform, and the opportunity to become a conduit for somebody's healing. And as always, this is a safe space to bring your whole authentic self. And the phone lines are open, so if you want to reach out to me or speak to or have a question for our guest tonight, we would love for you to call in. That number is 914-219-0880. And on that note, let me welcome and introduce tonight's special guest who's graciously chosen B2B. as a place where she wanted to entrust and tell her story publicly for the first time. She's a mother of three. She's a grandmother of seven. And by day, she works for Amtrak. And she is also the founder of an organization called Women with Great Expectations. And through her program, she assists women in being accountable, restored, and healed as they seek and pray for inner healing while expecting change for the better in their next steps to a healthy relationship. And as I understand it, my dear, that has become less of a passion project and more of a true calling, if I remember correctly. So y'all, welcome in tonight's special guest, Ms. Shadana Patterson.
Good evening, everyone. How are you?
Good evening, ma'am. I am so good, and I am so excited for you to be on the show. And, you know, I've shared with the audience before that I love how social media allows us to meet and connect with amazing people. And so, you know, to those of you who are listening, let me just say this. If you log into your online social media, if it's Facebook or TikTok or wherever you log in, and your timeline depresses you or it exhausts you, I challenge you to revisit who you are in relation with online, because I tell you what, I log into my timeline every day. It uplifts me, it inspires me, and it allows me to connect with people who are truly purpose-driven individuals. They're there to be a light in the darkness, and in fact, it was that kind of a random connection through a comment that I made on one of our mutual friends' posts that you saw, that you sent to somebody else who had a podcast, who invited me on to be a guest, and then I got offered my show, and here you are now as a guest. So talk about full circle. Wow.
Yes.
That is so dope to me.
Yes, that's how
that
God does it.
That is so dope.
Yes.
Man, he just knows.
Yes. Yes,
absolutely.
And I listen to a couple of your shows, and you do a phenomenal job, and I am just honored to be on here and blessed to be on here to hopefully say something that will help someone where they are right now or where they're stuck in from their past. And that's what it's all about. What I've been through and me still continuously walking in my victory means nothing if I can't share and someone can hear and be delivered and set free. So, you know, it's just not talking just to be talking or just to be heard. You know, we have to be more than just hearers of the word, but doers of the word. And so I just pray that the words will land on ears to hear and hearts to receive and change will be made. So, yes.
Amen. I couldn't have said that better. And, you know, that's a philosophy of mine, that survival is a responsibility. And that's one thing, you know, you and I have talked about that we kind of share is the desire to be able to take the negative and be able to flip the script on it and turn it into something that not only helps us heal and recover and get over and move on in a positive way, but is able to also transform and help other people change their lives and give, you know, hope and courage. So that's one of the things that I really loved about our connection is it came by so naturally and so completely organically. And then to find out that we had so many things in common, you're like, that wasn't nothing but God doing all that.
Right.
So I know I have heard just tidbits of your story. You know, we've talked on the phone and stuff in the past. And so I'm just going to open the floor up to you. I'm going to stop talking, and I'm going to turn it all over to you, my dear, and just tell us your experience. Share as much as you like. Go as deep as you want. And, you know, we'll just take it from there.
All right. Thank you for the floor. And thank you for everyone who's joined in and listening. And again, as she said, my name is Shadana Patterson, and I am a mother of three, and I have a beautiful stepdaughter. That's how I ended up having seven grandchildren. My stepdaughter has five beautiful children, and my oldest son, who's 34, has two. So I've been blessed, and, you know, I don't look like what I've been through, and that's to God be the glory. And, you know, I'm going to start at the meat of things before we get to the best part. And the meat of it is the beginning. The meat of it is the parts that a lot of times aren't dealt with, aren't talked about, aren't healed from. And the meat of it comes from me being a little girl, and at the age of four, my father was my father passed away from sugar diabetes. He was in a coma, so I really don't remember my dad. I have smidgets of memory of him, but not much memory of my father. And all I know is I missed him. My mother never remarried, and I remember just always wanting a dad, and I would see my girlfriends with their fathers and things like that, and I longed for that. And but what I did have was my Ken and Barbie doll. And my Ken and Barbie doll became my imagination of what a family was to look like. And, of course, I'm 50-plus years old, getting ready to add another plus to it in March. But, you know, our television shows that we had back then were a lot of family-oriented pictures, and that's why it's television, as I've heard you say, tell a vision. And so the vision that was told me from what I saw is that a husband and wife should love one another, and they did things together, and they got in disagreements, but there wasn't the fighting and the disrespect and the name-calling, but they seemed, you know, tend to work it out. And so that, as a little girl and as a teenager, that was my vision. My Barbie, Ken and Barbie, they went to the market together, and they cleaned the house, and they had the little kids, and that was my vision. And there was nothing wrong with that vision. And that was a good vision, but it wasn't reality. And reality was I was dating a gentleman, and I won't give, you know, any names, but a neighborhood friend and childhood friend. He lived the next block over, and when we were coming up, everybody dated somebody on the block. And so he and I, we hooked up, and we began dating, and I didn't see anything but a person at that time that was caring. And let me just say this too. His dad, he and I would be on walks, and we would see his father in a car ducking his mistress. You know, he was ducking his mistress down, and that's not over-exaggerating. Mm-hmm. And so I remember he was so embarrassed, but I made sure I never made him feel ashamed or anything like that. And as we begin to be, I got married at the age of 19, 20, 21, 22. I think he's 3 years older than me. So he was 22, and he became a state trooper. And we weren't married yet when he became a state trooper, but we had been dating for a while. And I remember when I saw him in his uniform, I was so proud of him and what he had accomplished. And sometimes, not even knowing, I guess when I looked at him and you know, we had been talking marriage and things like that, I looked at him as someone that I didn't get when I was younger, and that was a man that would protect and a man that could provide. And I'm not saying that I was a woman with my hands out, because, no, I worked since I was 16 years old up to the age I am now, and I'm a very hard worker. And everything that I have from the home that I own to this day is in my name because I worked hard for it. So, no, I'm not a gold digger, and even back then I wasn't looking for a man to take care of me. And let me also say in this, I'm not in no way, shape, form, or fashion saying that all police officers are abusive or anything like that.
Right.
That's just like saying that all men are dogs and cheaters. You know, you can't put that label on everybody. So you have good cops out there and good husbands. So I do want to make that clear. But I think in the way I looked at him, and he became my Kindle. He became, in my vision, everything that I imagined when I was coming up that I didn't have in my own home. And we got married, and I was always told the first 3 years of a marriage is a telltale. However, the first 3 years go pretty much will let you know how the rest of the years. If you can get through the first 3 years, pretty much you can make it. And what I've learned is that marriage is death. We think when we go to funerals, that's death. That's actually life, because you're living, your soul is living on, and prayerfully in heaven. So you're living on. But when you get married, that's when you're really dying, because you got two people dying to themselves to become one. And sometimes that's not easy. But he and I, we got married. Again, I was 19, he was 22. And I think the first year of our marriage, it was, I think that uniform made him feel important. It made him feel respected by his friends and family, those who he might have felt like didn't respect him or didn't look up to him. And there was just such a pride. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of women, when they see men in a uniform, they don't care that they're married. All they care about is that they're lonely. Only thing they care about is what I thought. Oh, he looked like a good protector and a provider. So I, you know, as a young wife, I was dealing with a lot of different doors opening that I wasn't expecting. And he became very, and no matter what I did, it was never pleasing to him. And he became very, where he wanted to own me. What's the word I'm looking for? Lord have mercy. Possessive. And,
possessive?
You know, and, yes. And you know, I couldn't go to the pool. And I'm going to tell you, you would have thought I was a brick house at 19, about six. But, girl, I couldn't go to the pool without a shirt on. It basically came down to my knees, and that's the truth. And I've never been a two-piece wearer, bathing suit wearer, but I don't knock any woman that does. But I'll never forget one day he came home and I'm at the pool with a girlfriend and I had our son there and he saw me and he called me to the house. And I go in the house and he asked me, you know, why are you dressed like this? I'm like, I'm at the pool. And he says, why aren't you covered? And that was my first real beating from him. And you're embarrassed, you are ashamed, and you don't want to tell anyone because you're young and you want to portray that you're happy, you know, and you're like, where does the tell the vision shows that I saw?
Right.
This is what Ken and Barbie did, and I don't recall this. And I'll never forget when I had my daughter, and she was about a month old, and I went to go to the crib, and I'm freshly from the hospital. I'm still in stitches, put it that way, and I don't know what he thought I was going to do, but he jumped up, and he said, don't touch her, and he literally grabbed me by my hair and dragged me through the apartment. So I'm holding my hair as well as trying to hold between my legs, excuse my way of saying it, because I'm thinking stitches or hair, which one? And and he began to change. The next thing I know, I'm finding different things from different women, and you know, then the affairs came, and you know, you look at yourself and you're like, what did I do? Where did I go wrong? You know, at that time, I'm cooking his dinner. I'm ironing his clothes. I'm not hanging the streets. You know, that's never been my personality anyway. Never been a drinker, not out there drinking. And one thing I know about a lot of times when a person isn't doing right, you know, they begin to say oh, you're cheating, or why are you up in this person's face? Then the blame and the guilt begins to come on you, and you're like, you know, what am I doing wrong? And it's a lot of things. I mean, and he told, I mean, I remember jumping out of a, we lived in a two-story apartment, and I jumped out the window one day when he came, because I had found some other letters and from another woman, and he found out that I found them, and he came to attack me. And I mean, I literally jumped out of a two-story window. And I remember he would lay his gun down to the side, and he told me, and this is something I'll never forget. He said, I was trained to harm you. I was trained to hurt you and not leave a scar. And he never lied. And as a young girl, when you sit there and you're missing your daddy. Wow. Sorry, I didn't even know I was going to cry.
Honey, take your time. That is okay. Because, you know, I always say when I'm speaking, and as many times as I've told my story, as many times when I talk about various experiences, there will be times when I get choked up. And what I've come to realize later, that somebody who I don't even know who's listening needed me to be that vulnerable. And it'll be a story I've told 100 times, you know, and this is literally your first time really going public, so to speak, with, you know, all of these details. So do not ever apologize, because this is part of, you know, you still healing as well, being able to have this conversation and talk through it and stuff like that. But, girl, that daddy stuff, I'm with you. Yeah. That stuff still, I feel you. So take your time.
Yeah.
You're doing just great.
Thank you. So, you know, and I'm like, wow. You know, and it just got worse and worse. And you're at a place where, you know, who do I call? I'm too embarrassed to call my mama, because I was the youngest, but I was the strongest as far as, well, let me take that back. Now I can say I'm the strongest, but back then, I was in a shell because I was the youngest. I was spoiled. I was baby to a certain, you know, certain degree. But my personality would come out every now and again, because I would do things that my older siblings wouldn't think to do or whatever or couldn't do. But I could and I did. And I always stepped up in this shell and shy and didn't really ask for help and too embarrassed to tell family what was going on. And I had family members. Had I told them, believe me, they would have had no problem not mattering his career, stepping in.
Right.
But he was too ashamed, right, too embarrassed. I remember times he would lock me out my house with our son, and I had to sleep in my car, and it would be winter time. And he would put a, you know, I would try to come in, and he would put a sofa up against the door and lock it to make sure I couldn't get in. And I would sleep out in the car in the winter, embarrassed.
With the baby?
With the baby.
Oh,
with the baby. And he would come and take the keys. So let me take that back. I ain't sleep in the car and not go somewhere. He would take the keys. So I couldn't go anywhere, and I'd sleep in the car and come and knock on the door, and he wouldn't answer and different things like that, and want to call for help, and I'm like, how do you call for help? He is police when he's telling,
right,
and he would make me feel, you can call whoever you want. We have a brotherhood, so you better believe you can forget about me having to answer to what's going on. And I believe
and with him being a state trooper, he's got a broader jurisdiction than a local police officer, right? Is that correct?
Yeah. And I'm going to tell you something. I don't know about now, but back then, you know, and it still could be today, but state police, they were like the top of the cream, you know, to be a state police officer. That was like everything, mm-hmm. you know. And so I was just so embarrassed. And I'll never forget a neighbor one day walked past my car and saw me, and she knocked on it. And I, you know, looked up, and she asked, told me to come into her home, in which I did. But I remember being so drained mentally that I literally was boiling our son's bottles, nipples, because back then, you know, you could take the nipples and boil them and fell asleep. Mm-hmm. And I fell asleep so in a trance, if you want to say, that the rubber burned, because I had several of them, and they burned so bad that I don't know if anybody's ever been in a home where you literally, it looked like you can take scissors and cut through the smoke. That's how thick it was. I didn't wake up. It took the fire department banging almost tearing the door down for me to finally jump up. And again, I'm so embarrassed because I know why I was in such a deep sleep, you know, being mentally and physically and abused and, you know, bruises and mm-hmm. things like that, that when I opened the door, I'm trying to act like everything's okay, and they're snatching me and running in, getting my son, pulling us out. And I remember sitting there crying like, God, where did I go wrong? What did I do wrong? This isn't how I envisioned my life, my married life, to be.
Right.
Where did
right.
it go wrong? But I'm going to tell you, healing is something. Healing is something. And it took my sister. We were on the phone talking. And he came in the house and he began to go off. He didn't know my sister was on the phone. She's 6 years older than me. And she heard him, and she began to, you know, tell me to tell him he better not touch me or whatever. I wouldn't say it because I knew if I did, he would. But he heard it.
Right.
So he snatched the cord out the phone, out the wall. And next thing I know, I think within 2 minutes, if that long, we hear sirens. And he knew it was for him. And for whatever reason, he ran. You know, instead of standing there like, I'm going to be all right. I think you could see the abuse was so strong on me. You could see it in my eyes, right. in my skin, in my spirit, in my soul. Everything. So he knew it's no line, it's no. So he ran, and I'm telling you, my sister came in. I think she almost beat the police. She went much further, and she had round up 4 men, and she walked in my home. She said, get everything she owned, enough is enough, and she pulled me out that home. And I went and stayed and lived with her until I went on my own, was able to go on my own a couple of months after that. And I never looked back with him, never looked back.
Now, did she yeah. suspect before that, but then that was kind of the confirmation that was because she said enough is enough?
Well,
did they kind of suspect something was going on?
After a while, you know, family and think they begin to see like you what's going on, you know, you
mm-hmm.
don't look right. And I think after a while, especially with the numerous cheatings, adulterous affairs he was having, you know, her being my older sister, I finally broke down and I, you know, talked to her and I told her. And then of course she then shared it with my mom. And so family began to know, okay, things ain't right. But I was I think mentally I was like, I have to make it work. You know, you're supposed to make it work. And I literally had, now I'm going to tell you something. This is the difference between religion and relationships, stupidity and wisdom. And a lot of the women back in those days, I literally had women tell me, you stay in that marriage and you make it work. Divorce isn't a God's will for you. You pray for your husband. And I'm standing there and I'm like, bruised. Now, he didn't leave the black eyes where people could see it. He would bruise where the clothes were, or he knew how to twist the arm, or he knew how to do different things to your body where you're in pain, but people didn't see the scars. And that's how for so long he got away with it. And people would just look at me and like, what's going on with her? You know?
Right.
And, but they would tell me that. And so, and because I trusted, which I thought was the wisdom of the elderlies of the church or whatever, I thank God. I knew God enough to where, you know, used my sister to say enough is enough and pulled me out.
Right, right.
And
you know, there's an old song. It lasted how long? 4 years?
4 years. Seemed like a lifetime.
There's a, girl, that's a lifetime worth of suffering. It really is.
Yeah.
It really is. There's a song, I think it's a Betty Wright song, and the song talks about back in the day when you talk about breaking up, everybody would get together and they say, don't blame Mr. Charlie. Mr. Charlie's just a man, and he's doing the best he can. And then they talk about making food and throwing parties and all that kind of stuff to keep the peace and keep the household together. And I'm like, no, somebody need to knock Mr. Charlie out sometimes. Like, let's not. But yeah, I mean that's a belief system, and it goes way back and it permeates a lot of women's suffering. And there's even today there's a lot of women in the church who are in situations that they really should not be in, but that remains, you know, kind of an undercurrent of the Christian belief system, is that you should honor the marriage and you should honor your husband, and, you know, divorce is not even an option. Like, you got to take that off the table. You got to figure it out.
Right, right.
You know, I wonder,
you honor your husband and you know, just get on your knees and pray and let God change him and correct this. And and as a matter of fact, being in such a situation, it lowers your self-esteem, you know, your self-worth. You feel, you know, there's something wrong, you're not good enough, you know, and then here I go again, you know, because I've been married twice, and I'm not ashamed to say it. I'm not ashamed to say it. I've been married twice and married wrong the second time. But that came from a lot of the brokenness, and I didn't get healed the way I needed to be healed. And then it led me to another one. But I'm going to tell you something. That first marriage took me out of a shell, honey. That shell was cracked. And that song, I'm Coming Out, I'm like, I will never let a man hurt me like that again. I won't do it, you know. And it's sad because then we put these guards up and we don't know how to be tender and gentle sometimes the way we should be. You know, we're very defensive and ready to attack, and it's like, no, I'm going to hurt you before you hurt me, and, you know.
Yes.
And then everything goes the wrong way, so now you got a different me, you know. And it's something, you know, you go from one being very, very gentle and shy and whatever the case may be and submissive and all of that to the, oh, you ain't going to do what he did. You can forget it. And we got our dukes up and our gloves on and the Vaseline on the gloves. We're ready to throw down. So, you know, and that just comes from, you know, just needing to take time to heal. And that's where my ministry came in, where I used to call it Single Women with Great Expectations. And God said, you are what you call yourself. So I took single off and I called it Women with Great Expectations. And I try to help and talk women, encourage women who might not have the same story as I do, but who are hurting from past, from their past, and just helping them, you know, to forgive themselves and getting past the shame and the feeling of being a failure, you know, and learn to be honest, open, transparent, you know, and just healing the heart. And it starts me with forgiveness. You know, we got to get past the pain, blame, and the shame of embarrassment, you know, of our not-so-good decisions we've made in life. And it's good to start by praying and asking God to heal and to help us to forgive those who hurt us, so that person or situation can no longer bound us mentally or spiritually. And, you know, a lot of times we ask God to forgive those who harmed us, and we, you know, forgive us for our not-so-wise decisions and choices we've made. But do we really take the time? And someone brought this to my attention. You know, they asked me, can I ask you a question? I said, sure. They said, have you forgiven yourself for the choices you made? And, girl, I had to stop and think, and I'm like, wow. I know I asked God to forgive me. I know that I forgave them. I asked God to forgive them for what they did. But no, I never really stopped and said, Shana, forgive yourself for the decisions, you know, you made, the good and not so good choices we've made in relationships, and allowing the wrong person to pick us to be their partners. You know, but in every situation, we can grow and glow and heal and learn to trust again, you know. And
I tell women all the time, this was a lesson that I had to learn for myself as well. And that is that with that forgiveness, the path to that is the conversation with yourself that says, I did the best I could, the tools and the resources that I had in that moment. Like, because a lot of times we're looking back and the regret and the guilt and the angst comes from, oh, I should have did this or I should have did that. Well, if you knew this or that then you probably would have did this or that. You wouldn't have done what you did. But you know, we're all operating from a place of the information that we have. Like, if I don't have information that tells me another option exists, I'm not ever going to look for the other option. If you tell somebody that they've never seen something else, so like going all the way back, I'm going to take a break here in a second, but when we go all the way back and you were talking about when your dad passed away and you were four, and you had that longing, right? And you and I kind of come up in the same era where my family on TV, my dream family, was, you know, I was watching The Jeffersons and I was watching Good Times. And, you know, even with Good Times, they didn't have a lot, but they had love and everybody stood up for everybody. Like, they always had each other's back. Malona had everybody back. Like, it was community. And so that's what I wanted, too. And I wanted that strong dad to come in and say, you know, I wanted my dad to be my superhero. And my dad basically disowned me. Like, I have no relationship with him. And I was about four at the same time when I had that experience with him. And that track alone, if left undisrupted and unchecked, if you have nothing to offset that, then you're out there looking for that. And so I can totally see, and I could totally see where, especially once he became a state trooper, like, well, I shouldn't get much safer than that. Like,
correct.
Who's going to protect me better than the police? Like, he's a man of the law. He's taking the oath to protect and serve. He's going to protect and serve a whole community. Imagine what he's going to do for his family. Like, I get it. That would be a huge thing. So I'm going to take a quick break, play a song that I feel is super relatable to this. And then when we come back, I want to talk about, and let's talk about that. So here is Trey Williams.
A woman should not live by the rules that's governed by the palm of a man's hands. Oh, baby, no.
Like,
I was like that.
I just think into it. I just think into it.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, you know, to hear a man say to you as an abused woman, who does he think he is?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have a right. He doesn't own you. You're not his property. So to have a man say that, and he says it with so much love and so much compassion and so much sincerity, like, I'm telling you, I sink into that song every time. It's Trey Williams. The song is called Tell Me Who We Think He Is. And
what a profound
song. Let me come back now. It is, you know, it is. And it just, like I said, it, and I hate when I play it because it takes me here. Like, there's so many women that just need to have somebody tell them that he doesn't have a right to put his hands on you. And they need to hear that from a man, but they need to hear that from a man in a way that's not a directive or a way that's not accusatory, that says you're stupid for staying. She needs to hear it out of love, and she needs to hear it with compassion, and she needs to hear it in sincerity, and she needs to hear it with an air of protection. And you deserve better, you know, and that, so yeah, that's enough on that song. So I'm back. I'm coming back. So before we went on break, we were talking about, you know, having that vision of what the family is supposed to look like, and the you find yourself in this relationship with this man, and you said a couple really poignant things that I really want to kind of draw back to. One is, what did I do and what did I do wrong, which we're going to come back to that. But before I get to that, the point about when something happened, when he put on that uniform, and you said you feel like, or you observed that it made him feel important. It made him feel respected. It gave him validation to the people who maybe didn't think he was enough. And I think the powerful piece about that observation from your standpoint is that, you know, a lot of times when we talk about domestic violence, and we're talking about it from the victim's perspective, but also something is creating the abuser. There's a mindset, there is a lack, there is a deficiency in self-worth or self-respect or whatever that I feel like drives that need for possession. Like I have to step on you in order for me to be lifted up. Mm-hmm. And so when you observed that, did you see with that like a shift in how other people treated him, or was it just kind of like all in his head?
No, actually, believe it or not, his parents, of course, his mother even more so, oh, she was so proud of him and he could do no wrong. And I actually reached out to her because she knew things were going on more so, you know, because he might have went to their house to cool off every now and again, because I might have been able to lock him out or do something to protect myself or have someone to the home. And I remember she used to tell me, just continue to clean your house and cook and don't worry about what he does. You know, and you'll get through this. And
thanks, Mom.
Yeah, you know, and it was very hurting. And my thing was, and I looked up to her, and again, you got the church people telling you something, and I was so confused. And then that uniform, when he put it on, it didn't mean the same anymore, you know, to me. Mm-hmm. I didn't see protection from the outside. I felt like I needed protection for me on the inside, behind the four walls. And that right. uniform became very scary to me. And you know, he was a totally different person than the one I dated, you know, from the age of, I think I was 16, 17 when we first started dating, and we married at the age of 19. Well, I got married at 19, and he was 22. But it was, yeah, you know, and then, of course, he would have his police friends that, you know, they would whatever in the neighborhood who knew him, you know, hey, Derek, you know, he put that uniform on. They knew he was a state trooper, you know. It was good for them to be able to say, you know, I get a ticket or something happened, I got somebody I know I can call. So everybody kind of sort of ignored the pain. You know, some people ignored the pain and things that they saw in me because they didn't want to see any imperfection in him. You know, they had to be on his good side, you know. And so sometimes you felt like you were getting looks like it's your fault. It can't be his fault. You know, he's a police officer. And they, too, looked at it as, you know, he's taken an oath to protect. So it can't be him. Right. Maybe it's you. And it got to a place where even I began to say, you know, is it my fault? What am I doing or not doing that's causing him to respond and react the way he is, towards me, not realizing that it stemmed from his childhood? And sometimes some of the beatings I felt like I received was like the pain he felt or anger with his mom for allowing his dad to do the things he did to her, Well, now I'm doing those same things to you, but I'm going to harm you. I'm going to let you feel the pain that I felt as a child watching my father disrespect my mom, you know. But I'm trained to do it, and like you said, and not leave a scar. So it's your word
looks
against
like we
mom.
Have. Looks like we have a caller calling in. Let me flip this over and see if they're just calling in to listen or if they have a question. So give me 1 second. Dr. Marcy on the B2B podcast with Shadana Patterson. Did you just call in to listen or did you have a question?
I called in to listen and to talk about that song. I was just listening to the music while we were on break, and it was deep.
Yeah, it was, right? That's it takes me somewhere every single time I hear it. Like, it, I never get tired of it because it really does kind of take you on a journey. So thank you for that. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. And this is Susan from Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, wow. All right, Susan. Well, we definitely appreciate you calling in and supporting the show.
You're welcome. No problem.
Okay, and so when we were talking about the what did I do, but first of all, because you just dropped a nugget, and I almost like skimmed right past it. You said that that's what he saw his father do to his mother, and so he grew up in an abusive household.
Right. And his is more so watching his father cheat on his mom, and his mom was aware, but she continued to ignore it and still prepare the dinner and do everything. And I remember to this day from us dating, I never saw his parents hold hands, hug, kiss, nothing. And one day we were invited to a craft thing, and the father actually had the audacity to bring his mistress. Well, she came by herself. But she came, but everybody knew who she was. And we thought the wife, his mother, didn't know until we saw her face. And her whole demeanor changed. And I remember sitting there saying, oh, my God, she knows who she is. And he and I, we were married, and it was like he was angry. And it seemed like more at his mom than he was his father. Like, you know this, but you're allowing this. But you've allowed this into our home. You've allowed this division, you know. And I said, no wonder she doesn't hold his hand or kiss him. She dealt with it, but did she really deal with it? She had so much pain and hurt herself. And so she basically was telling me, you keep your family together. You do the same thing I'm doing.
Maybe that's all she knew. Like, you figure our generation – we came up with that, you know, that kind of undercurrent of teachings. So you figure the generation even before that, how deeply embedded that was. You know, cheating was nothing back in the day.
Yeah.
Like, it seemed like every man had a mistress. When you start talking to people about, you know, their family circumstances and their family situations and the dynamics and all that. So, you know, that's when I, you know, in the new book that I'm writing now called Challenge to Change, that's what we really talk about, is that generational system. Like, what you grow up in and what you're exposed to from birth to age 7 changes everything. Like, you're taught how to, you're taught in those, in that critical learning period, really where to, how to engage with the world. You're taught what's good, what's bad, what's right, what's wrong, what makes you happy, what should make you sad. And so he learned to govern his house from in a pit of dysfunction.
Correct. Yeah.
So it would only, like, if you have no, like we're saying, if you don't know that another reality exists or that is possible, how do you move into that? And so if he doesn't, he obviously knew what he was doing was wrong, because he's saying, I'm not going to leave any marks that anybody can see. But to not have another coping mechanism to be able to love in a healthy way, like, it doesn't seem like he ever observed what a healthy love, what a healthy relationship looks like. So how do you govern and how do you become the head of another household if you don't even know what that looks like? You don't even begin to know what that looks like.
Correct. And I, unfortunately, I was the one that all of his brokenness, he spilled out and he put it on me. You know, I was the one that had to take mm-hmm. all of his argument, you know, and things like that. And he used that badge and that title as his scapegoat to hide behind. And so, mm-hmm. yeah. Yeah. But healing is a good thing, I'm going to tell you.
I think we see that kind of superiority represented today with men in uniform. I'm just going to say that. As it relates to, we start talking about, like a police officer pulls you over and you're not, yes, sir. How are you today, sir? Like, they're very quick, many of them. And like you said at the very beginning, we're not talking about all police officers. We're not saying law enforcement is bad. I have some amazing friends who are great police officers. They're honest. They're upstanding, you know, the whole nine. But you have those few bad apples, and that's what gets magnified. And so when we
Correct.
Start talking about the things that are magnified and we talk about people being pulled over for traffic stops and they end up dead,
Correct.
And, you know, mm-hmm. the whole respect thing, or you're not going to talk to me, like, as soon as you, if they feel disrespected, just get out of the car and I want to put handcuffs on you and I want to throw you on the pavement. I want you to lay down. I want to humiliate you. And
right.
I feel like, and I don't know this to be true, but I kind of feel like some of that stuff is ingrained. Like, I want to know, what are they taught? Like, what are you taught about respect? What are you taught about, because it's a respect, it seems and feels like, is a one-way ticket. Like, you have to give them respect, but they don't have to show you respect.
Correct.
And
it's
so
like their brain
if you... Yeah, yeah. And so that's why this story, your story was so interesting to me, because I can't even hardly imagine the hopelessness that you feel when mm-hmm. you're living in a hell with the very type of person the that's who you're supposed to call. You're supposed to call the police, and then, like you say, like, he's a state trooper, so I'm covering the whole state, just,
right.
you know, Phoenix, Arizona, or Mesa, Arizona, or Glendale, it's the whole state of Arizona, right? Well, you're not in Arizona, but...
Right.
So he has a very broad footprint, and, like, all of those things just kind of come together, and they created this cocktail, and so... The whole what did I do wrong, I think we kind of talked about that when you were talking about, like, I get where you're asking yourself that, because the people that you go to, the people that you had respected, people in the church, your mother-in-law, everybody's telling you, just figure it out, just work it out, like, hold your marriage together. Like, that's the biggest priority. Your life is not the biggest priority. The marriage is the biggest priority.
Correct. Wipe your tears, you know, hold your head up and act like you're representing your home, you know, not the pain. You don't represent the pain. You don't represent the abuse.
Mm-hmm.
You don't represent the fact that you're married to a man that upholds the law, but yet he's tearing you apart as an individual. He has no respect for you, you know, and, It wasn't easy. It was a lot. It was a lot on me at a very young age to try to do and handle.
So do you think yeah. your sister, if that situation had not happened where he came in and was being all loud and she heard and she intervened, do you think now in hindsight looking back, like, you would have stayed, or how do
you
feel
looking
back at it now?
I'm going to be honest. I probably would have stayed to the point where it would not have been good, meaning right. I think it would have changed me where I could have become dangerous. And this is sometimes where, You know, you have women, it's a self-defense, you know. Because after a while, you get tired of, you ain't jumping out of a two-story building but so many times. You know, you're not going to be dragged by your hair through the house, through your whole apartment with stitches and even without stitches, but so many times and arms behind your back. And so because in my mind I was told, you know, you be a strong woman, you're supposed to stay. You know, you don't put your business out on the street and you handle it mentally. I think if anything, I would have snapped. And I probably would have stayed in, not knowing any better, because I didn't, you know, want to seem like a failure. I failed, and I failed with the what I thought were the wise women instead of the three wise men, the three wise women, you know, the church women and your in-laws and, you know, whatever the case may be. I think I would have snapped. So God knew how much I could take, and he allowed that day, that situation to happen for my sister to intervene. And it was the first time I could truly breathe, you know. It was nice to wake up expecting him to be looking over me to hurt me, and to finally get through that and be able to sleep a good sleep and know that I wouldn't be harmed, I wouldn't be dragged out to bed because he felt like it, because he just left out of another woman's home, and so he wants to also come back and abuse me for that, you know, because I didn't cook the way she cooked, or I didn't do the thing, whatever the case may be. You know, and you just never knew what was coming to you one day or the next. And again, call police. He is the police. You know, what are they going to do but say, hey, I know you, you know, or you're one of us, you know. We can't do nothing with this. He's one of us, you know. And so it's hard. It's a lot on a person, you know. Yeah.
Well, I want to take a quick break, and then when we come back, I want to flip it, and I want to talk about all the amazing stuff. I want to talk about what it's like on the other side and how it felt when you started to turn things around and how you were able to successfully do that and, you know, learning to love again and be open to love. You and I have had a conversation about that. So that's what I want to talk about when we come back. So let's take a quick break and listen to some BB Winans.
Just have faith.
y'all. We're back. Listen to the V2V podcast, and I'm here with my guest tonight, Ms. Shadana Patterson, founder of Women with Great Expectations, and we are discussing what it was like in her experience to be married to a officer of the law who was also her abuser. And so if you've missed the first half of the show, I encourage you, once we share the replay, make sure you go back and listen to it, because it's a very compelling story. And she so very transparently, and I'm so proud of you, sis. Like, I know this was your first time telling your story publicly, so I think you did a marvelous, marvelous job of sharing, and I know somebody that you touched somebody with that. So the phone lines are still open, though, so the 914-219-0880, if you want to call in, if you have a question for me, if you have a question for Shadana, we'd love for you to call in. And before we went on break, I said when we come back, I want to talk about all the good stuff. And so that's why I played When You Pray by Bebe Winans for you, because I know that your faith carried you a mighty, mighty long way. So tell us the good stuff. Are you there?
I'm sorry. I had muted my phone while you played the music so that I didn't know if people could hear me, so I muted it. Didn't realize I didn't unmute it. I do apologize. But I wanted to say
that was me at the beginning of the show, so now we're even. I don't feel so bad.
Okay, right. Because I was steady talking. But I was saying that song was a beautiful song, as I begin to hear it, I mean, it just touched my spirit, because that's what brought me through much prayer and soul-seeking and crying out to God and just, you know, letting him hold me and comfort me, you know, as he did even when I was in this situation, because I was a prayer warrior even then. And but one thing about my situation, and I tell people, I bent, but I didn't break. And that's what the enemy wanted. He wanted me to break, but I didn't. And it made me stronger. And that's when I came out of that shell. And I realized as well, it wasn't him. It was the spirit that he had allowed to use him to break me as a person. And when I realized on a spiritual side, it allowed me to forgive him. It allowed me not to hate him. And it allowed me to realize, girl, there must be something special and powerful in you that the enemy tried to use someone as him, you know, who you thought you were going to trust. He used him to try to break you so that you wouldn't have self-esteem. You wouldn't know your value. You wouldn't know your self-worth, you know, and you would despise marriage. Or some women turn to other women, and I'm not, you know, coming against anybody's choices, but I'm just saying some women there hurt so much. It's not necessarily something they thought they were or felt like God created them to be in, or whatever the case may be. They've been hurt by men so much they turn to women. And the enemy was trying so much to just have me lose my way and my sight. And I was like, devil, you so dumb. It made me stronger. It made me a more powerful woman. You know, I'm telling you, that shy shell I was in, it was gone. It was gone, and that's how I wore even more in my prayer life and in my relationship with God, and it just built me stronger and stronger. And I learned to forgive him, and like I said, and not getting into this, got into a second marriage, and that one didn't work. He was more of a mental and verbal abuser as well as a cheater, and even with him, went through a lot. When you have to say to yourself, you know, I had to ask God, why am I drawing these type of people? What's going on? And that's where accountability comes in, you know.
Yes.
This is the big part of healing and moving forward. You know, it's so easy to see the faults of other people. But when we take the time and look at ourselves, we can then see our part we took and allowed in the situation. And I'm not saying in no way, shape, form, or fashion that the choices or decisions in life that a woman made deserve them to be abused in any kind of way. You know, we can walk unhealthy in unhealthy relationships from being unlearned, you know, from family past, mm-hmm. generational curses, and different things like that. And I had to begin to look at me, and I said, okay, I'm a stop. You know how they say, who's the common denominator in this situation?
Yep, so I was just about to say that.
Yeah. So I began to look at me, and I said, okay, Lord, and it started with, you know, he began to show me as a child, you know, not having my father, not never having a man to call me his little princess or his queen or his, you know, validation or, you know, any account, you know, nothing like that. So I'm as a woman trying to figure this thing out myself. And that saying, looking for love in all the wrong places, you know, and God allowed me to begin to see me and my part, you know, in my actions.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's where the real healing became, because then I knew I could go to God and say, okay, Lord, I'm tired of this cycle. You know, and a lot of times, if I can say this, you know, other men, they'll hear, oh, she's been married twice. You know, I'm leaving her alone. She got issues. You know what? You're right. You're right. There are a lot of times issues because we haven't really gone to God for healing. You know, we haven't asked God to heal us from the things seen and unseen in us. The things that are rooted and hidden that needs to be dug up. So you know what? I tell that man, you're right, but don't judge me. Don't
right.
judge me. You know, sometimes the only difference between you and I is because you made a wiser decision not to get married, and I made a decision where it says it's better to marry than to burn. I chose to marry, not jump into it, but thinking, okay, this is the right one, and not really taking the time to learn the person. And, you know, I'm going to add this too. You know, I said I wanted to get into the meat before we got into the good, you know, telling them myself, as your show is anyway, getting the meat of things before we jump into the good. And a lot of times men don't take the time out to find the meat of a woman before they jump into the good. And see, the good to them is what's in between a woman's legs, a lot of them. When
mm-hmm.
the word of God says a man that findeth a wife, findeth a good thing. So she's good in that aspect. But if he had an opportunity to get into the meat and get to know her and her past and things, then guess what? You would know if, and for the sake of a word, and I'm not saying that we are an assignment, but I'm just saying you would know if she's equally yoked to you or your assignment, if you want to say, or the woman you're to help. But they don't. They say, you know, we're visual. So they get into the good. She's cute. She got the body. She's fine. I want the goods. And then you realize, because you never did get to the meat of it, that, you know what, she still has healing. She's still broken.
Mm-hmm.
Am I the one to be her friend to help her through this or not? So now that man, because he wanted the goods, got into a relationship with a woman that's still hurt and broken, and now he's thinking all women are crazy. No, all women, I ain't getting married. I ain't doing it. No, get to know that woman, because you'll find out. And then same thing with that woman. She gets hurt by that man because she hasn't gone to God and she hasn't allowed God to heal her and show her who she is in the areas of her life that she hasn't totally given to him. And again, this is where the unseen things that we didn't even realize. I had a friend ask me within a year or so, and he said to me, he said, did you ever, he said, can I ask you a question? I said, sure. He said, did you ever forgive your father for leaving you? And I'm going to tell you something. All I knew is I missed my father. I wish my father was alive. I was angry with God at times to say, why did he have to die? You know, why couldn't, if you were going to take him, Lord, why couldn't you have taken him when I was old enough at least to be a daddy's girl, to at least have known him? But I never realized a lot of the pain and bad decisions I was making is because I never forgave my father for leaving me. And I'm going to tell you, I wept so hard. And when I began to forgive my father for leaving me, not being there, not to be daddy's little princess, not having a father there for the father-daughter dance and different things like that, healing began to come in me. My eyes began to open up in a lot of things. When I began to forgive myself for the decisions I made in life, healing began to come.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of times, even in both my marriages that I had, I bent, but I didn't break. And it made me the woman that I am today. I can almost look at a woman, especially from my first marriage, and tell that she's being abused. And
right.
I've had different women come my direction, and I looked at them, and I just said, are you okay? And they say, huh? And I said, are you all right? He, how did you know? And I said, I know. I know that spirit because I've been there. And they've broken down. I'm talking about grown folks broke down and cried in my arms. So with the enemy thought he was going to use to scar me, and I'm not saying scars weren't there because that's what I had to be healed from. But what he thought he was going to use to kill me as a person and have me confused and lost and never married again or always having failed marriages, he made me more powerful. Those situations, I said, devil, you dumb. You stupid. You did the wrong. You messed with the wrong one. Because now I am out to help who I can help, and I help women to know to go to God and get healing from your childhood, your teenagehood, your adulthood years for the not-so-good choices you made, and leave the baggage at the altar. Take that backpack on your back. And see, you'll leave the bags at the altar, walk away, and still got a backpack on. Take that backpack, whatever that small hidden issue is, leave it at the altar so you're not bringing that into the next relationship. You know?
Let me ask you this. How did you, because I know when a lot of people go through traumatic experiences and then to have, you know, both marriages kind of go topsy-turvy, a couple things. First of all, let me say, you know, when we talk about the relationship with God and we talk about that common denominator, because that was the game changer for me too. When I looked in the mirror at my black and blue face and was like, looking up all of my tumultuous and abusive in different ways relationships, I realized I was the common denominator. Like I was the only thing that any of those individuals had in common, and that if I was part of the problem, I'm part of the solution. But I feel like sometimes, you know, people get mad at God because they're like, well, God, why did you let this happen? And I challenge that and say that sometimes we are a contradiction between God's desire for us versus our desire for what we want for ourselves. So God has a blessed plan for us, but because we have other desires or we see things that we want or experiences that we want to have, then we tend to navigate towards those things in spite of what blessings may have been laid out for us. Like, we just take a different path. We run on a different bridge. So in that, how did you hold on to the fact that this wasn't God's fault? Like, because you said that your faith, and I knew that, that's why I played the song that I played, but you said that your faith was like the thing that you kind of held on to and like helped get you through it. How did you stay on that side of your faith versus falling on the other side where you're mad at God? Like, why did you let this happen to me?
Because you know what? You'll get warnings. You'll get those red flags. And if truth be told, I'll never forget my mom told me one day, and I'm see, this is a big part of what I didn't say. My mom looked at him and she said, Shadana, don't marry him. He's going to hit you. And maybe because of what she knew as police officers, the story she's heard, you know, and she knew what he was going to the academy to be. And I said to her, oh, Mom, he would never hit me. He loves me. And and I think that's another reason why I hid it for so long, because what she said was true. And I was too embarrassed to say you were right. So I slept in the car. So I dealt with the things I dealt with because God gave me a warning through my own mother. Yes. And I didn't think, you know, you're not married. You haven't been married since my father passed at four. You know, this man loves me.
Mm-hmm.
This is my kin. You know, this, no. And I'm telling you. So I knew I couldn't blame God. I knew I didn't listen to the warning.
Gotcha.
You know, but what God showed me through this, your mess becomes your ministry in both situations. So God is saying, I didn't ordain it, you know, but I was with you. And through this, what the devil thought he was going to do to destroy you, it's going to come out for your good, because you're going to now be a mouthpiece and a warrior, a prayer warrior for other hurting women. And he healed me from it. And then you're going to have a testimony of how I still desire to be married. Marriage is a beautiful thing. See, the devil thought he was going to put a bitter taste in my mouth so that I could keep on what? Committing a foreign, you know, fornicate for the rest of your life, and you go on and split hell wide open, you know, or, you know, just here, you know, you're a woman to that loves to be married. Since you were a little girl, you desired to, you know, to have a beautiful family, not a man to provide for you so you can just say, you know, kick your feet back or whatever. But marriage to me is a beautiful thing. I've always thought that, you know, and my views of married couples go further than before black families were even on television, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you saw the white families on there, and I'm telling you, so it was in me, and it was, and then again, seeing my girlfriends, not knowing what was happening maybe in their four walls, but what I saw and visualized, it was like, you know, wow, you know, I desire that. You know, I'm seeing them going on trips, and I'm seeing them going to the market together, and I'm seeing them go to the beach together, and they're laughing, and, you know, I desire that, and it's nothing wrong with that. And the enemy wanted me to feel like, guess what, that doesn't exist, not for you anyway.
Right.
And I'm like, no, I'm worthy. You know, I'm a good woman. You know, and I deserve, God said he'll give me the desires of my heart, and I desire to be married. And so, and that's another thing in my teeth, you know, when I'm talking with the women and as I'm encouraging them for healing, you know, and to go to God for healing before you get into another relationship, pray for the healing first. And then ask God to put you in the view of the man that is to find you.
Right.
And And as we're doing that, we're asking God to teach us to be the good thing. The man that findeth a wife findeth a good thing and finds favor before God. So I'm like, be the good thing you need to be for that man, because your good thing isn't for every man.
Right.
So, Lord, teach me to be the good thing I need to be for the man who is to find me, who is to find you. And he doesn't.
You know,
and it doesn't.
And then, no, I was just pairing on to what you're saying. Like, we do have to be able to rely on that faith. We do have to clean up our house internally within ourselves and our mindset and how we think about things and all of those things. But we also have to be courageous enough to ask those uncomfortable questions. Like, I feel like we don't have good front-end conversations that, see, I think you brought that up earlier, you know, like if we had asked that question beforehand, like maybe I would have known, like maybe I would have saw something. But I think sometimes, like, we're afraid of the answer. Like, I see what I like and I like what I see. So if I ask this question and the answer is not what it needs to be, then I have to own that. And I have to now act on it. And so sometimes, you know, we get the signal, we get the download. Like your mom said, like, don't marry him, he's going to hit you. Like, it doesn't come much more plain than that. And yet and still, we ignore the data. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we can't keep doing that.
You know what's so awesome? When the man that is to find you, and he might not even know, and you might not even know, but a part of you can, as you get to know the person, it's like you're like, wow, that's where that equally yoke comes in. And unfortunately, a lot of people think being equally yoked means I go to church, he go to church, we both believe in God, so we're equally yoked. No. His vision is totally different from your vision and vice versa. He can't support you. You can't support him. You're not equally yoked. But when the man that is supposed to find you, you'll find those conversations of questions. Sometimes you don't even have to ask, because it'll just come so easy as both of you are being transparent and open with one another. And it's not to say that you two still, you know, you're still two people trying to learn one another, so you might bump heads here and there. But the difference is when a man truly is the one that was to find you and he takes the time and get to the meat of things and get to know you, he'll even see things that you still need healing of. That was, you know, he'll see things that she's still hurting in this area. No, it's
right.
Not for me to abandon her, but it's for me to help her to see it and then be with her as she works through it. So I'm not running from her. I'm not pointing a finger at her, but I'm going to help her to see that this is an area that you still need healing from. And I say, Lord, I thank God. And some of them to me are big, and I was like, Lord Jesus, and I thought I put everything at the altar, but some things residue is, you know, is still there. And to me, I almost feel like God sometimes leave it there so you two can grow and learn, and you can see how much this person really cares about you and love you and willing to work you as you both have faith in God, you know, and vice versa. But it comes easy. And that man got to know he can trust you as a woman so he, too, can be vulnerable and open up, and you're not going to run to your girlfriend and this person and put his business out on the street, but you want to take it to your pillow between you and God. And when he sees, wow, she respects what I've gone through or what I've shared with her, and regardless if it troubles you, you can go to them and say, hey, you know what, these things of your past, you know, it troubled me. And one thing he'll do is make you feel secure that guess what? That's my past. And I'm even going to help you work through that. Because sometimes being transparent and honest about your past and things, it can you know, harm you, not harm you, but put questions in your head, or you're like, oof, you know.
Mm-hmm,
but it's
mm-hmm.
us. When that man really loves you, he'll make you feel comfortable, even with the things of his past, to assure you, that's my past. I'm a new creature in Christ. I'm no longer that person, and I'm here to love you, not harm you.
And there comes a point, too, where you have to be healed enough to be willing to be vulnerable enough to, A, ask the questions, accept the
mm-hmm.
answers for the truth that they are, but
yeah.
then to be open to let somebody even see that side. Because I know even for me, even now, like, there's very few people that I truly, I mean, I give a lot of myself and I share pretty transparently, but with inside of intimate relationships, you know, it takes a while for me to get that get truly, truly naked, so to speak. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you cross a barrier when you get to that point where you can just really, truly trust that your nakedness is going to be okay. And, you know, and maybe you can feel me on this when I say, especially when you had some of those daddyless daughter experiences where you had this longing and you feel abandoned and you feel unsupported. And so then you feel like everybody's going to betray you or they're going to leave you. And so if I show my nakedness and if I show my vulnerability and if I show any sign of weakness, that they're going to manipulate that because that's what you're used to. And so it takes a lot to, you know, be able to find the courage to be completely naked spiritually and emotionally and mentally with anybody.
But you know what I say on that, honestly? When you, not saying you meaning anybody, when you struggle that much, I would say this is when there's still healing that needs to be done in you.
Mm-hmm.
Because
right.
when you get at a place where it's just you and God and you love being by yourself, you can be okay by yourself, you love who you are, you have forgiven your past, you've let God heal you from your past, you've forgiven the people of your past, you've forgiven yourself for your not so good choices of your past, and you are just relieved, and it might seem like a lot, you know, and some women, it can take months, years for that healing to come. But I'm telling you, when you get past all of that and you realize, devil, you've been trying to shut me up. Devil, you've been trying to, and again, it's realizing, you know, so many times we attack the person. We have to realize it's a spiritual thing. And when you go, devil,
right.
you've been trying to have me not to be able to trust and love again. You know, how can you be intimate with a person you don't trust? Trust is at the heart of your intimacy. But most of all, learn from our past so we don't repeat the same cycle. And sometimes, again, that takes months or years, depending on the individual and their realness, to be open and honest
right.
and accept responsibility of their part, you know, and their part could be ignoring or, as I did, not paying attention to the red flags God has sent their way, you know, to see the hidden, and sometimes it can be right in your face, you know, and harmful ways of the other partner that's being ignored or dismissed. You know, because our eyes are wide shut, you know, and
right.
and that's where we need to take accountability, and that's where accountability comes in, and that's when you realize that I'm not really healed, and how can I trust this man to be vulnerable? How can I trust this man to be open if I'm not completely healed from me, from my past?
Mm-hmm.
Now they're not the danger. Really, you are.
Right.
You're the one. And I'm not saying this to you. I'm just saying you, meaning anybody.
Oh, no. I agree.
We become our own poison and our own, you know, and again, and that's where we then jump in a relationship with could be a good man or whatever, and he really doesn't get to know us to say, whoa, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think you still got some healing to do, and you're a wonderful woman, and I don't want to hurt you. And right, you know,
right.
And I don't know if I'm the one who could be the one to, you know, help you in the process, you know, or whatever the case may be. Or maybe he's saying, hey, you're a wonderful woman, and I'm willing to take that chance to help you in the process. But it
right.
starts with
us. I did a show at the very, very beginning of the podcast, my very first episode, actually, and it was with DeMaurice and Mark Elliott from When Black Men Talk. You know the fellas. And we talked about that very thing, like what is it like for the man when you're dating a woman who has been subjected to different kinds of abuses or who has self-esteem issues and things like that. And so, you know, if anybody hasn't listened to that show, that episode, go back and watch and listen to that replay, because exactly to what you're talking about, like we can be our own worst enemy sometimes as women once we're on that healing journey. And so when you do find that good guy who just really wants to rock with you, we don't trust it because we're like, I heard that before. And so we have to kind of open ourselves up a little bit. But we are out of time, unfortunately, because, you know, we could keep on talking. But on one final note, you said you said something that made me think of a song my kids used to learn. They were learning in choir years ago. And the song was called "The Devil Thought He Had Me, But I Got Away." That's always what I go back to. I'm just like, nah, bro, you thought, but nah, I'm not the one. Like, I'm God's child. So thank you so much for sharing and for opening up and just, you know, inspiring and encouraging. And so if people are interested in your program, how can they find information about it? Is it virtual? Can people call in? What's the process? That type of thing.
Yes. I had a number that I was calling, and I would actually have conference calls, and I put that down just for a little. Right now they can reach out to me via telephone. My number is 443-204-2970, and I'm in the process of letting God broaden my territory in different areas that he wants me to go with that. So I would listen to women, and I said, okay, Lord, you know, what else do I need to do to help, you know? And I'm going to tell you, some of the reports that I've received from some of the women have blessed me, the healing that they received, some relationships that they had, but it's more than that, you know. And so I want to make sure that I have every tool that the women need for a healthy new beginning in a relationship. But for someone, you know, a prayer partner, someone to listen and just give what I have to give to them. It's really a blessing, and I love it. I love encouraging women. Iron sharpeneth iron, and we have to be there for one another. That sisterhood. And again, my number is 443-204-2970, and I would love to meet you. I would love to hear your story, and I would love to shine some light on how you can begin the process of healing and renew your mind, your spirit, and move on healthy. It doesn't have to be the way the enemy would have you to see it, you know. So, yes.
All right, guys. Well, that's it. That's our show for tonight. Thank you, Shadana Patterson, Survival
with
Responsibility. And you showed up. My sister, you showed up. So I thank you
for that. And as a reminder for you, those of you who are listening, if you have a story that you want to share, some knowledge you want to drop, or even if you just have some show ideas, some things that you want, some topics that you want me to cover, check out the website at 9seconds.org/V2V. That's V as in voiceless, the number 2, and then V as in victorious. There's a form online that you can fill out. And then also, if you want to connect with Shadana, she gave her phone number, the 443-204-2970. You can also find her on Facebook, and you can also find her inside of our Voiceless to Victorious group on Facebook. So she's active in there. She's one of the admins in there. So that's our show for tonight, guys. We will see you next Tuesday. Shadana, thank you so much, and have an amazing night, because I know I kept you up past your bedtime.
That's all right. Thank you, everyone. God bless you all.